Hey, welcome to your Friday Night Live. Almost the end of the month, 30th of August, 2024. If you missed the pre-show, you listened to our rousing late 50s rendition of Oasis' Don't Look Back in Anger. I saw a documentary on them some years ago, and Liam, the singer, had no interest in music until he got hit in the head with a baseball bat and then discovered he could sing and hold a note. Actually, a really talented vocalist. Not, obviously the greatest, most mercurial voice in the world, but when his brother, who Noel, who's basically the songwriter, I didn't realize he did the vocals on Look Back in Anger. He's not a bad singer, actually, but he played it once or twice, and then Liam just, you know, got it and went all the way with it and so on. But yeah, you know, British Brothers, let me tell you, I could write a whole novel about British Brothers. Oh, wait, I did. It's called Almost at almostnovel.com. 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 You should check it out. It's a free novel. Really, really, really great stuff. I didn't get a haircut. I got them all cut. That's right. Can't do much about the top, but it's nice when they trim your ears so you can hear again. So, hello, hello. Hope you're doing well. Questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems, whatever is on your mind. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. And welcome, welcome to everyone. If you haven't been here for a while, well, it's just great. And I'm thrilled to have you here. And let's get to your, do we have any questions yet? Otherwise, I will talk about things that I have on my mind. Somebody says, I live in an extremely rural area and need to move to a city to improve my dating opportunities. What U.S. cities do you and chat recommend? Not only have I not gone to U.S. cities much, but I haven't been in the dating market since men were men and women were women. So it's been a while. All right. Where does the idea of the noble savage come from? Why is there so much obsession with exonerating native and primitive cultures? It's a great question. So the noble savage is a secular version of the Garden of Eden myth. So when you have a religious mindset, you have a great challenge, which is explaining the problem of evil. Because if God created the world and God created people, why is there evil? So the way that most religions handle it is they say, well, we were born perfect, but we were tempted and fell from grace, and that's original sin, and that's Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and why are you naked? And hey, man, that woman you made me told me to eat the tree, so it ain't me, man. Adam was punished not for eating the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Adam was punished for blaming even God, right? That you are punished most in this life for that which you take no responsibility for. You are punished most in that life for that which you take no responsibility for, which is why I, to a fault, take an excess of responsibility. I'm like a diabetic with cheesecake. More is better, or a pre-diabetic with cheesecake, perhaps. So for me, more responsibility is always better because I have studied my book of Genesis and know that the fundamental punishment was meted out not for disobeying God, but for lying about it, taking no responsibility, blaming God, the snake, Eve, his fig leaf, his left nipple, anything but his own consciousness. And if he had taken responsibility, he wouldn't have been cast out of the garden and cursed, as Eve was, with work for the men and childbirth for the women, and a flaming sword was put in this way. And we are cast out of Eden, the Eden of personal responsibility, when we don't take responsibility. We are given this amazing gift of self-ownership, and the degree to which we cast it aside for the sake of avoiding responsibility slash blame is the degree to which our lives get worse and worse over time. Avoiding responsibility is like this drug. It's a drug. And it gives you an immediate high. Whew, dodge that bullet. So you dodge the bullet, but die of slow environmental lead poisoning as you avoid your own self-responsibility, as I do from time to time as well. So the noble savage is the question, well, why is there evil? And the idea is, of course, that back in the day we were good, and now we're bad. Back in the day, we were good, and now we're bad. There's a lot of reasons why people believe in this sort of stuff. children get increasingly blamed as they get older. And in the teenage years, a lot of teenagers look back and say, and parents do too, oh, you were so great and cute and wonderful and lovely when you were little, and I don't know what happened, and things just got worse. So there's a Garden of Eden for most people, which is like the crib where they're not beaten usually, and early toddlerhood where they're hugged and things are more cute. And then when they become smelly, defiant, rebellious, skeptical teenagers, apparently I'm still in my teenage phase, but there's this sense that back in the past, way back there, it was better, happier, nicer, warmer, and nostalgia, right? Nostalgia, all the things that you left behind, all the pleasures you refused to take for worry, have you nostalgic for the loss in the past of the happiness you could have had if you'd taken responsibility and therefore worried less, right? One of the prices of not taking responsibility for your life is anxiety. Because if you're not in control of your life, if you're prey to circumstances and convulsions and other people's propaganda and so on, if you are kind of an NPC programmed by the mainstream corruptors, well, you're going to have a lot of anxiety. The opposite of anxiety is self-ownership, is self-responsibility. So those people who are less intelligent and more prone to violence, so there's a sweet spot. I talked about this many years ago with Dr. Kevin Beaver. There's a sort of sweet spot at about IQ 85 where you have highest levels of criminality as a whole. Lower than that, it tends to slide away. Higher than that, you tend to be more, it's more beneficial to you to participate in the free market and so on. So the noble savage as well has a lot to do with, see, there are two gene sets, right? There's violence and there's thought. And it's not all genetic and all of that, but there's warrior genes and so on. So the people, and we don't even have to say it's genetic. We can just say that it's temperament or preference or choice or whatever it is. But there are people who are more suited to a violent, lawless society. And there are some people who are suited for a more civilized, restrained, anti-violence, conceptual, idea-based, trade-based society. It's the old tension between Rome and Carthage, between the warriors and the traders. Now, the traders need the warriors to enforce the law, and the warriors need the traders to supply them with weapons. But in society, you tend to see this pendulum that goes back and forth between the traders. 19th century was a time of traders, and the 20th century was a war between the traders and the warriors, and it looks like the warriors, those who want to use force to get resources rather than production and trade, the warriors are winning out. That's W-A, not W-O. So when you have, and this is really only going to accelerate with AI, I was reading this statement the other day by somebody, it kind of blew my mind. So I, as you probably remember from my vague references to my pre-public philosopher career, my first programming job was in a trading house, a stock trading company, and I worked on some very complex haircut and trading programs and algos, which actually helped me quite a bit when it came to Bitcoin. But in that, you had a lot of people, and you see the scene in, I guess, Wolf of Wall Street. It's an old scene with John C. McGinley. We've got Knicks, and we got Chicks from Wall Street, where you've got people trying to sell crap stocks to old age people, pensioners, people who don't know any better. Man, this stock's going to go to the moon. Let me put you down for 100 shares. It's going to go to the moon. And it's all, I mean, I used to get these guys calling me up when I was high up in the software field because, you know, they would go and find, or maybe it was automated back then, you just find people online who might have some cash and just relentlessly phone them. I remember a guy from Xerox trying to sell me a wireless printer for like 2 months and I kept saying no. But they just call you up and, hey man, you know, this is, it's now or never. And they just try and greed and fear you to FUD and greed you into buying their crap stocks. And of course, you'd say, well, if these stocks are so great, why don't you buy them? Why don't you just phone some stranger, right? Just phone some stranger. I mean, it'd be like you find a winning lottery ticket, you know, like it's a half a million dollar winning lottery ticket. And the first thing you do is phone up strangers and offer them some. It didn't make any sense, right? So, and all, I mean, in general, I believe it's just a general pump and dump. You get a bunch of people that buy the shares, you dump yours, and everyone else is left holding the bag and so on. So there is an AI program now that can do these calls. It will phone people. It will try to sell them the stock based upon they've recorded, I assume, a whole bunch of things. They got a whole bunch of scripts and they've all fed it in. And people can't tell the AI from the person. And if you were a trader trying to sell these stocks, I guess this was like your, you know, here's your call list. Thank you for the tip. Here's your call list. Go sell these stocks. Go pump these stocks. And you might get 100 of those done in a day. Maybe. I mean, Glengarry, Glenn Ross stuff, right? Now take off your shirt. You know, I'm not quite at the place where I'll take off my shirt for $20. I'm not the opposite of that, but I'm not quite there yet, but I do appreciate your support. So there was an AI that can do not 100 of these a day, but 30,000 of them a day. Could do 30,000, just massive dial. It's all running. You're just trying to get people to sell these shares, to buy these stocks, right? And you can get the AI to do 30,000 of these calls. It's wild. So let's just say there are the warriors and there are the traders, right? The producers and the violent ones, right? The thugs and the merchant, so to speak. So when you get a technological society, when you get a free market society, when you get a free trade society, when you get a capitalist society, nerds tend to do quite well. Nerds tend to do quite well. I say this, of course, as a bit of a nerd myself, right? So we tend to do quite well because we're very creative, we're very productive. I just watched a great Canadian film. It actually gave me PTSD. It's a great Canadian film called Blackberry about what not to eat in the wild. No, it's about the rise, and I guess it's not total fall, but it went down from 20% of the cell phone market to less than one over a sort of 5 to 7 to 9 year period. BlackBerry, which was called BlackBerry back in the day, was one of the first cell phones. And I was watching this movie about the rise and fall of this Canadian company. Maybe they'll make one about Nortel as well. So BlackBerry, just a bunch of nerds and amazing nerds and very productive nerds and fantastic nerds and so on. But you know, they had the social skills of your average hamster. And I remember that, you know, the reason I got PTSD is you had a bunch of salespeople out there overselling the software and then handing the massive sales to the tech team to try and figure out. And the annoying thing is it kind of works. It kind of works. When you, I remember I had a salesman way back in the day who sold, oh yeah, we totally integrate to all your Java executables, all your Java business rule layers, right? So there's the interface layer, there's the business layer, and then there's the database layer. And I did figure out a way to get ASP.NET back in the 90s to interact with Java and see if there were any business layers to be executed before the data was saved to the database, but only because the salesperson said we could already do it and then handed that problem to me. And the annoying thing is, you're kind of cornered and it kind of works. A lot of, you know, fake it till you make it. It's like sell it till somebody codes it, sell it, and then hand it over and say, hey man, the sale's already been done. This is what we're contractually obligated to do. And then you figure out a way to do it. I hate it that it works, but it sure as heck does. So I got PTSD from watching that that movie. But yes, it was a bunch of people who couldn't bench press two jugs of Clorox. And apparently their hairstyle was, you know, forward floppy man bangs and those 80s headbands. For the workout, Richard Simmons, let's get physicals kind of stuff. And so you've got the nerds and you've got the warriors. And when you get a technological society, a power, wealth, resources, influence, all shifts to the traders, to the producers, to the capitalists, to the whoever, right? The people on the market side. And what happens is the people who are really good at bloodshed, the people who are really good at violence, well, they're unhappy. They're sad. Because if you try to, like if you're a producer in a time of violence, you just get your stuff stolen, right? You spend all winter and all spring getting your crops going, and then the Cossacks or the Mongols, whoever, just come and take your shit, right? And so in a time of violence, the producers are slaves to the warriors. Right? I mean, can you imagine back in Egypt? Boy, back in Egypt, you had to pay 20% of your income to the Pharaoh. I mean, can you even conceive of a tax rate of 20%? I mean, slaves had to pay between 15 and 20% of their output. But they got to keep 80 to 85% of their output. I mean, that's just astonishing. Just how appalling and serf-like those conditions are. I just need a moment. It's pretty appalling. So in a time of bloodshed, when, right, what's the old quote? Why are you quoting laws to men with swords, right? They just do what they want, right? So in a time of bloodshed, the producer produces the slaves to the warriors. But in a time of free market, the warriors are slaves to the producers. In other words, you look at Mark Zuckerberg, goes for a run, he's got 19 security guards all around him. They make nothing relative to his income. And you hire your private security, you hire your security guards. And so the warriors are, in a sense, the serfs or the paid muscle for the capitalists, right? And so when society swings to the market side of things, the voluntary free trade side of things, there's this, that the producers look back at the savage times, at the dark ages, and with a shudder, right? This is Hobbes' famous observation that, you know, nature red in tooth and claw, in the absence of a protective private property and violence opposing, private property protecting and violence opposing state, nature red in tooth and claw, life in a state of nature is violent, nasty, brutish, bloody, and short, right? And that's, there's horror, the intellectuals to some degree, and the capitalists. So they look back in horror, some of the intellectuals, we'll get to that in a sec. But the problem is, or at least one of the reasons why this state of nature exists, is there are people who really miss the violence. Why do they really miss the violence? Because they're really good at it, right? They're really, really good at the violence. I mean, I know this personally. Of course, I've chosen to give speeches with bomb threats and death threats and all kinds of violence targeted at me and others. You know, when I was in Australia, I was being hunted through the streets by leftists and all very exciting and so on. And so there are people who are much better at violence than I am, obviously, right? And so in society, there is a lot of nostalgia for the state of nature, which is the noble savage. Oh, it was so great back then. A man could hunt, a man could live in caves and eat skins, and, you know, that the speech of skinning the deer and hanging them out to dry under the shadows of the Empire State Building that comes out of Fight Club, you know, this nostalgia. And of course, I write about this quite a bit in my novel, The Future, which you should absolutely get a hold of. It's free, freedomain.com/books. So there's this nostalgia, and we've all felt it. Haven't we? Haven't we all felt this desire to live simply, hard work, sword play if necessary, blacksmith, ting ting, war, battle, not having these bureaucratic nooses slowly tighten around your ball sphincter and carotid arteries, your jugular slowly clogged up with a million dusty men in gray flannel suit, bureaucratic, slow, dredging constipation of all that should pass for adrenaline and cortisol and action in human society. Oh, I'd love to build a log cabin. You're going to need a permit. And this is too close to that, and you don't have enough this, and you got to have this kind of drainage, and you're going to have that. Oh, God, forget it. Oh, forget it. Oh, forget it. Well, I guess it's bunky life for me. So, you want to do anything, and it's paperwork. I remember talking to a guy who was building a house, and he was saying, oh, yeah, no, they keep coming out here, and they keep nagging me about this and that. I get scared. I get paper like 20 sheets high of everything that needs to change, and you can't do anything. You can't do anything without political connections. So this idea that, and I wrote about this again, at the end, later on in my novel, the present, which you should also get a hold of. It doesn't matter which one you read first, but the present is also my yearning for that. Don't you have that yearning? Hit me with a why if you've had that yearning to live in a simple thatched cottage in the middle of nowhere with your own livestock. A solid, practical wife. No high heels, no makeup, no gel. Just simple, rough clothes, good hard work, a solid night's sleep, and the smell of nature in your sinuses. Because I lived that life. I lived that life. I worked in the bush for well over a year. Simple, clean, hard work, fresh air, exercise, sunlight, animals. I wasn't a hunter. But the work was hard. The muscles hummed. There was a roaring of good swinging flesh in the ears. The meals were hearty. The body was tired. The sleep was great. Simple. This is the yearning for the medieval life. I remember when I used to live on Don Mills Road. We moved like three times in the same apartment building, but I had one, in one of the apartments we lived, I had a balcony. I used to sleep out on the balcony. And I wake up in the morning, early in the morning. Deep breath before the stink of the city starts to infect your mind. And I looked out by the edge of the balcony. I looked over to the left. And there was the edge of the buildings. And it looked like, because there were a lot of trees, it looked like we were on the edge of civilization. And out there was Mirkwood, was the forest that went on forever that you could explore and build and track and make paths and cut your way through the wood. And I loved cutting my way through the wood. When I was up north, you got a good axe, a good machete, good hardy swinging muscles, and you can see a path. You've cleared it through. You've bent nature to your will. You've carved through like a rocket through a cloud. Left your mark. Staked your claim. Moved matter rather than mere thought. Ah, it's glorious. When muscles and man meet, testosterone, spine, willpower, and aggression carves your path through life rather than, I hope it didn't get canceled. Oh no, someone found something that I said and took it out of context. Oh no, oh no, oh no. God Almighty! I'm not saying bring back duels.
No.
But it would be faster, that's all I'm saying. Bad, obviously, totally wrong, but faster, yes. So, the people who miss the magic meat of manly muscle, the violence, the aggression, the assertiveness, who get all claustrophobic and neurotic in a system of voluntarism, private property in the markets, they yearn for those thatched roof, riding horses, grabbing women, setting fire to things, taking stuff, growing and trying to survive. They yearn deeply for that life. And then they try to arrange society where more and more coercion transfers resources. But they can't. The question is the noble savage myth, the people who write about it this with such evocative language. How does it come from a dim dream of the coercively inclined to a florid set of syllables that evoke the deepest passions of our ancient hearts? This is the Dungeons and Dragons, the Lord of the Rings, the Sword of Shannara. A backpack, some goods to sell and trade, a sword, some companions, a horse, and a path. Oh, isn't it nice? When you're buried neck deep in tax forms, don't you want to just carve a path through the wilderness and build shelter for your wife and children with the trembling muscles of your bare arms, and will nature rather than wrestle with foggy bureaucrats. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished. No, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me. But how does it get translated from this dim preference to this mythology? Well, that's the intellectuals. So I remember I said the intellectuals go both ways, often, for real, for real. Any way the wind blows. So the intellectuals love to dream of... The intellectuals love to dream of the noble savage, because the noble savage time represents a time when intellectuals could convince people through stories, analogies, power, superstition, and the early primitive embers or starting fires or priming waters of religion. Now you can spin a compelling tale, You're so convincing that you can fuck with people's health, right? I put a curse on you, Macbeth. You shall not sleep. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted, fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, breathe candle. A life's but a working shadow. So, the intellectuals love when they could curse people and fuck with their health. Get them so wound up, so believing in these curses, that they stressed and worried and panicked themselves into immobility, into paralysis. When verbal abuse were like arrows into the nervous system, inflaming and degrading it. And this, you know, this idea that there's a curse that makes a woman barren. Well, that curse is slander. She's got a terrible sexual disease. She's inhabited by a demon. She will give birth to a demon, right? She has a vagina dentata. I have cursed her with teeth in her vagina. So then the woman is infertile because you've spread enough lies and rumors about this. This is not exactly gone from the modern age, right? So the intellectuals yearn to go back in time to a time when their verbal abuse could command the soldiers. This is the Thulsa Doom of Conan, not the second cheesy one, but the first one that was a little deeper, right? This is the Robert E. Howard Conan stuff where the power is not the sword. The power is the word. Or as Conan says in the second movie, Conan the Destroyer. I can't really do another level. What can a sword do against magic? And of course, entire civilizations are being overthrown by language as we speak. As we speak, as we listen, as we sit, as we talk. So the intellectuals bend the will of the warriors to their verbal will, and this is why the intellectuals in a free market wish for a return of the noble savage, and they paint the past as heroic, as misty-eyed, as deep and spiritual and meaningful. And this is part of the environmental movement, is a desire to go back to the ages of violence. The ages of violence, when man was part of nature and nature could have her way unimpeded. So the intellectuals, who often don't do very well in a free market environment, they yearn to go back to when their sorcerous language and their treasonous language could command the hearts and souls of the less intelligent warrior class and slam them in phalanxes against their enemies. This is still happening even now, right? Even now, right? The warrior class is being dominated by the artistic intellectual language classes. So the warriors have a distant dream of back in the day when they could fight and win. And you see, The Incredibles touches on this a little bit too, when, you know, the big guy has he remembers back when he could fight and act before bureaucracy and legal liability and legalese and restrictions and regulations tied him to a desk job. This is also talked about at the beginning of the classic Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where the guy who's come to turf Arthur Dent out of his house is a descendant of Genghis Khan and is constantly fighting his own desires to pillage and burn everything to the ground. Marxism is a desire to return to a primitive state when the intellectual class, which were the witch doctors, commanded the warrior class to take stuff from the productive classes. And this battle between lies and property, between fantastical tales that carve idiot swords through the throats of the curious, productive, rational, and inquisitive. Ah. Well, I understand the yearning. I do. I mean, my ancestors were warrior class. My ancestors were aristocracy. Their swords were in service to the king. My name is French, of course. My family's lands were in Ireland. We came over with William the Conqueror in 1066, and we were granted our lands because we were very good warriors for the king. So I really, really understand this. And we can all think of shows and movies where the upside of the primitive life. And everybody's had this desire, haven't they? I mean, I'm going to maybe speak to the more testicularly inclined, but hit me with the why if you've ever had a dream of simple violence to resolve disputes. I know I have. When I was a kid, I would think of that. And the yearning for the intellectuals to use the power of language. Language, metaphors, analogies, stories, compelling narratives of culture and history and society and country and king, these are all fantastical mind webs put in to control the sword arm of the simple, violent, and more gullible. And you can see this with parents all the time. This negotiation is over. We're done. Enough. Boom, the hammer comes down. Right? Don't we all have that temptation as parents to feel the beast rising from within in many situations? To have the beast rise from within. I mean, I remember in the tour, 6 years ago now, the tour of Australia, the magnificent city hop. Lawrence Southern was giving a speech and a protester rushed her and was tackled by the security. I must confess to some significant disappointment. I was giving the speech, you know, you give a speech, there's a lot that's going on in your mind, especially I gave like an hour plus without notes and very complicated stuff. There's a lot going on in your mind. You're gauging the audience, you're gauging the reception, you're gauging the interest, you're gauging the friendliness. And of course, because I am who I am, I was gauging for assault. And I tell you, man, I was like, Oh, please. Please. Bring it. Bring it. I mean, I'm fairly strong. I'm very quick. I know a little bit about self-defense. And I was like, enough of this media yapping and slander and lies, and I just bring it. Bring it. Whew, I get goosebumps even now. But they didn't. They only picked on Lauren. Not the most courageous thing I've ever seen, but they did not try to attack me. So we understand it, don't we? So the noble savage is the inchoate dreams of the warrior class combined with the lust, drive, and desire of the syllogistically phantasmagorical, intellectual, creative, artistic poet class to domesticate the warrior class with stories, to put the bit and harness of language on the feral elasticity and spontaneous aggression of the warrior classes that we can guide and teach them. And again, we see this all, it's all happening now. It's all happening. This is not anything abstract. This is not anything we don't know. This is all happening right now. And people are being goaded to violence all the time. All the time. I mean, I remember when I was touring I don't remember the media ever condemning the violence that was used against me. Ever. Ever. I was always condemning the violence. But they never did. They loved it. Because they wanted to whip up aggression, right? I mean, that level of slander. They wanted to whip up aggression so that unstable people then want to attack you, right? So it's a way of remote control activation of latent psychosis and hostility through the relentless application of slanderous language, right? Damn, the sentences are coming out well tonight. Ooh! That's some fine stuff. Come on, tell me. This ain't worth a donation or two. In the book, what is it? What's the book? In the book Sapiens, the author frames the agricultural and industrial revolutions as being foisted on the masses rather than emerging organically as a result of need and technology advancement. Do you? Do yo? Do yo? I mean, the agricultural revolution resulted from the liberation of the serfs. It was in the mid-19th century, little past that in Russia, but earlier in England and some other places. England, I think, was one of the first, is the liberation of the serfs. So you were no longer tied to the land as a half-slave and bought and sold with the land. You could now move and buy and sell the land. And so there was a reduction in the non-aggression principle. And the results of that, yeah, they were inflicted on some people for sure, but there was a general reduction of the non-aggression principle. And how do we know that? Because productivity went up. Whenever you see productivity going down, it's because the non-aggression principle is being violated extraordinarily, in extraordinary depth and width and breadth, right? I mean, in Canada, productivity is cratering, right? Well, because cheap labor is denying the need for automation, or it is postponing the need for automation, so. So the Industrial Revolution was foisted on the masses, like, or what? What was the alternative? To continue the medieval half-starvation, endless plague stuff? You know, what I'd love to see, I don't think anyone will ever do this work, what I'd love to see is, has the economic efficiencies that people claim from internationalism been more than offset by the constant plagues, illnesses, and sickness that comes through the population as the result of international trade? So for instance, they say, yes, well, but you know, in the early Middle Ages, trade routes opened up with China and India. Yes, and through that, we got the Black Death, which killed a third to a half of Europeans. Was it worth it? Because you got better spices. Oh, look at that, spicy food again. Once more, like we don't have the recipes. Was it worth wiping out a third to half of the European population just so you could get tea, dyes, and nicey spices? All right. You need more challenging debate partners. You're assuming that it could be. Stefan, are you ever coming back to X? I await X's apology for unjustly deplatforming me. That's all. Because when people do you a grave wrong, they owe you an apology. So when that comes about, I will return. It can even be informal, off the record, doesn't matter. But, I'm not going back without an apology. Right, that's what I've always said to people, right? If people wrong you, then they owe you an apology. And if you don't get an apology, you don't resume the relationship. Right? If you had a friend who half destroyed your marriage by spreading lies about you, and your friend just wanted back in your life, would you have him? No, of course not. All right, let us get to your questions as a whole, because I may have missed some unthinkable. Yeah, the permit stuff is soul death, that's right. Was milking a cow every day had unlimited firewood to pull from? Well, that's the Owen Benjamin question, right? Guy's been milking cows, I think as long as my daughter's been alive. It's very popular with intellectuals, but they would be the first to get clubbed. No, every intellectual thinks that they can control the mindless muscle of the warrior class through the potency of their poetic language, right? But everyone believes that, right? Dances with Wolves offered some of this as well, a return to Tooth and Claw. Yeah. Steph, this is brilliant. One of your best, in my opinion. I'm making this a part of the curriculum for my kids. Oh, I'm glad. Thank you. I thought it was pretty good myself, too. When you had the crowd do the call of the Kookaburra, I was terrified the sun wasn't going to come up the next day. Right. Hey, Steph, what do you think about this trend among married women where they hyphenate their last names? Independence? But it's their father's last name. Is it just a fad? Ironically, I know of a woman who married into a famous family. She proudly presented her new last name on social media. She didn't hyphenate anything. Right. I mean, it's all just the relationship between the sexes is all just so foundationally unreal. It's all, I mean, I genuinely believe this, that money printing produces psychosis. It produces a kind of low-grade or even high-grade psychosis. And so, for men, the psychosis is that imaginary success equals real success.
I beat someone in Fortnite. I'm a warrior king. I've achieved something in the real world.
Nope, that's just fake stuff, right? It's just fake stuff. But it produces this unreality. And also generational wealth produces unreality as well. This is one of the arguments that Roman has. He says, look, you got the wealthiest generation in human history, which is the boomers. And so everyone's just waiting for that free shit. They're waiting for the house. They're waiting for the inheritance. They're waiting for the 401ks. They're waiting for the life insurance. They're waiting for all of this free stuff. And waiting for free stuff is limbo. It is a slow, creeping, paralytic death of near infinite expectations. Waiting for someone to die is not being much of a human being, but rather a form of vulture. Oh, was that a hot murmur I heard? So there's this general psychosis. One of the great psychoses that is going on in the modern world with the foundation of the welfare state and debt and free healthcare and government jobs for women and all of this. One of the great psychoses that is occurring is that women scorn men. Women believe they don't need men. We don't need no men. It's all a patriarchy. We can do it ourselves. Men are useless. Men are dumb. Let's throw rocks at them. Whatever, right? I mean, it is, we can dance with our t- Taylor Swift headphones on, we don't need a man. So this idea that women don't need men is a psychosis that is produced by fiat currency, by money printing, and so on, right? So if women want to be independent, I mean, okay, go for it, then you can't take any government programs because government programs are 80% funded by men. So why do you need student loan debt forgiveness? I mean, the data is very clear. Why do you need student loan debt forgiveness? Because female students are massively in debt. Men are paying off their debts, women aren't. And so you've got these overeducated women who can't make any money. They've been tricked and fooled into thinking that if they act like men, they'll be attractive to men, which may be the case with gay men, but not so much with us straighties. And so women have accumulated this education, which makes them hypergamous. A woman's increase in education reduces the number of men that she's willing to date, which is great for the top players, but terrible for everyone else. And also, a woman, in general, can't pay off her debt because the degrees that women go for are not economically productive. The most economically productive degree, at least as of some years ago, was, that's right, petroleum engineering. That's right, petroleum engineering. Although, how you build bridges out of oil, I don't know, but then I was more on the software engineering side. So, petroleum engineering. Now, how many women do you think are going into petroleum engineering as opposed to, say, a social work, maybe some nursing, right? Being a teacher, right? They don't do this stuff. In fact, I've known a couple of women over the course of my life who got engineering degrees. How many of them work as engineers? Quick question. How many of the women I've known over the course of my life, probably half a dozen, how many of them work in engineering? Yes, that would be a big fat zero. Not a one. Not a one. So women's degrees are not economically productive. Of course, everybody was told, well, you know, we just educate people and they'll make more money. Okay, so that's a theory. That theory, of course, has completely failed. And it's not anything to do with patriarchy because the more choice women have, the more they choose economically unproductive degrees. Well, we know that because as female autonomy increases, segregation into relatively unproductive girl degrees increases. So in a place where there's very low female agencies, yeah, they do computer science and other things like that. But then when they have more freedom, more liberation and so on, then they just go into, nursing, of course, is economically productive as a whole, although that's doubtful given how unhealthy everyone in particular in America is these days. But I mean, yeah, the degrees are just, you know, anthropology, geography. I mean, just it's all nonsense, right? So the reason why the student debt relief is such an issue is because men are being taxed to pay off women's unproductive degrees, economically unproductive degrees. And one of the reasons why women are so keen, of course, they want to not pay all of this money, but one of the reasons why women are so keen to have the government remove their debts is the ladies are finding that men are actually quite good at calculating economic interest, right? So men and women fit together, and one of the reasons we're able to specialize is someone else does the other thinking for us, right? So I can focus really on philosophy. My wife does the things that I'm not as good at, and I do the stuff my wife's not as good at. So our brains have done a division of labor between the genders. And if you give women questions about economic issues and interest and investment and so on, they score abysmally relative to men. I mean, this is true of just general knowledge as a whole, but there are things that women know more about than men, but in this particular case, women just don't know much about that kind of stuff. And if you've ever talked to women and said, oh, what's your plan for retirement? How much do you need to retire? I'm going to travel, right? I mean, they just generally, I mean, it's lots of exceptions, but they just generally don't. They don't really think about these things because a lot of financial planning over the course of human history, it was more efficient to have men deal with that more and women deal with that less. And you can't just rewire everyone's brain because you want to snap your fingers and make this magical equality stuff happen. You just can't. You can't make it happen. You can't take hundreds of thousands or millions of years of brain specialization and reverse it because ideology. Ideology is the belief that human beings have no innate natures. There's no innate differences whatsoever. And There's no such thing as IQ, of course, right? So the worker can become the manager, no problem. If you remember the movie with Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, Trading Places. Right, the skeevy guy who's ripping people off by pretending to be a legless homeless veteran, well, he can just go and become a stock trader, and the stock trader can just be cast down and end up homeless. Right, I mean, it's all just massive amounts of, you know, leftist environmental stuff. If you change the environment, you change the person. Right. So, thread lost. Please remind. What was I talking about? I went down three different paths, and I couldn't get back. I could not get back. What was I talking about? Remind me, please, my friends. This is your test to see. This will be on the test. Were you listening? Help me. It happens every couple of weeks. It will return. Oh, yes. Psychosis. Right. Got it. Thanks. Fine. I'm fine. I don't need your help. I don't need your help. So, this independence of women is just fueled by debt. It's just fueled by debt. Like, I saw this TikTok of a woman who was like, we're just not going to have children. It's just not a good deal for us because we just don't like the way that men are treating us. And we just don't want to. And you can't make us. And we're just going to decide to go and travel. And we're just not going to have any kids and blah, 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 right? It's like, okay. So how are you going to save for your old age? Right? You can say, hey, man, I'm not going to have kids. And I'm not going to have a husband. And so I'm going to need like twice the savings because my husband is not, I'm not sharing space and rent with my husband. And I'm not having kids, and so I'm going to need to work twice as hard to save for my old age, right? But they don't want to do that. What they want to say is, I don't want the responsibility of having a husband, I don't want the responsibility of having children, and I don't want to save the money that I would have spent on having children for my old age. They want to have a life with far fewer responsibilities and no addition, with far fewer responsibilities and no additional obligations, right? And it's just a matter of choose your suffering, right? Choose your suffering. So what women want is like, well, we're not going to have kids and we're not going to work 70 hours a week to save money for our old age and we're not going to get married. And it's like, so then you're going to run out of money. I mean, you're going to run out of money because you're going to retire with almost no money, right? You're just going to retire with almost no money, right? Women don't save as much as men, right? Women save $3,000 annually compared to a little over 7,000. So women save 3/7 as much as men, right? Yeah, women don't save as much. Women have to fund a longer retirement with less money. Women are expected in the U.S. to live to 79 years. Men are expected to live for 72 years. The 7-year difference, right? Even for someone who spends a modest $40,000 a year in retirement, this amounts to an additional $280,000 to cover those final 7 years. Women on average have saved about 30% less money by the time they retire compared to men. So, excellent. You're going to live a lot longer and you have saved 30% less money. Women have more student debt than men. Women borrow 25% more than men. Associate degrees program. 25% more. I don't agree with the fact that in the past, women weren't allowed to borrow without their husband's permission. But you can understand some of the impulses behind it. So let me ask you this. And I'm sure it's even worse now, right? What percentage of women aged 55 to 66 have no personal retirement savings? What percentage of women aged 55 to 66 have no personal retirement savings? What do you think? What do you think? Come on, what do we got? 50%, 40%, half. Yeah, that's right. So about half of women aged 55 to 66 have no retirement savings. Now, I mean, it's not that much better for men. 22% of women have $100,000 or more in personal retirement savings compared to 30% of men. Half of women have nothing saved for retirement and they're almost retiring. Like, isn't that wild? Isn't that absolutely wild? I'd be shitting myself. I'd be shitting bricks sideways out of my armpits, right? If I was 55 to 66 with no savings for retirement, my God, that's staggering to me. No wonder there's a lot of anxiety, right? The latest data, this is from June 24th, 2024. Women in the U.S. have saved just a third of the amount that men have set aside for retirement, setting up a potential crisis among female retirees. No, it's going to be a huge crisis for male taxpayers. Men had saved a median $157,000 for retirement, while women had only put aside $50,000. According to a survey of 905 U.S. adults between the ages of 55 and 75. My gosh. 46% of men said they were looking forward to retirement and had more plans compared with only 27% of women. 55-year-old Americans were financially unprepared for retirement. The median savings for a person of that age was about $47,950 compared with the almost $500,000 recommended by Prudential. It should be more than that, right? Isn't that wild? So women live longer and aren't saving for retirement. How empowered are they? Are they going to be empowered to live on seaweed and gravel and oxygen when they get old? I mean, you when you retire, you're going to burn through $100,000 in a couple of years, right? So, of course, they're all blaming it with a gender pay gap, but the gender pay gap is women's choices. The average woman's retirement balance, according to another source, is $118,000 and change. This is about 44% less than $170,000 the average man has. So in terms of, so you want to, the high stuff skews off the bell curve as a whole. So if you look at more of the medium stuff, the middle number, right, the median figures, median retirement savings for women are just $31,291 compared to $45,000 for men. And what are they imagining that in 20, 30 years, the government is just going to hand you money? Well, it might, but it's not going to be worth much, right? Not going to be worth much at all. You set a personal record for your longest daily move streak. 42 days. That's very nice. No, you can't give me notifications, you freaks. All right, let's look at one other fact. This is from February 19th, 2024, US, I think. What percentage of women have less than $100 in savings? What percentage of women have less than $100 in savings? God, appalling. The percentage of women that has less than $100 in savings is 39%. 4 out of 10 women, 2 out of 5, 40% of women have less than $100 in savings. Now, quick question as a whole. Quick question. When you go to the mall, how much of the average mall is absolute trash, bullshit, nonsense for women? Just out of curiosity, you go to the mall. What do you see? Do you see stores with pretty shoes and handbags and baubles and jewelry and crap, garbage, nonsense, dresses? Who cares? Who gives a shit? Waste of time. It's going to be outdated by next year. Doesn't matter. Huge waste of time, resources. And how much of your average mall is dedicated to women's retarded vanity purchases? Just out of curiosity, what do you think? You know, that's just the reality. It is impulse purchases, vanity, Sex in the City, garbage, nonsense, materialistic, consumptionistic crap. Yes, it's one of the reasons why it seems like about 80% of the modern economic policies are there to shift resources from men to women. Because men will save their money on as a whole, and women will spend their money. Men will invest in useful stuff, women invest in crap. In general, lots of exceptions, in general. Now, a lot of men don't have much savings either, but men can just keep working. So, one of the problems that's happening, how much in a mall is dedicated solely to men? Okay, so how much in the mall is dedicated solely to men? Now, you could say, well, there's Brooks Brothers, there's, places where men's suits are sold and so on. But in general, and I'm not trying to blame women for everything to do with this, because I don't dislike a nice suit and you do need it from time to time, but a lot of that stuff is driven by women wanting men to dress up well for X, Y, and Z reason, just as a whole. So it's not, there are men's shoes and there is, Best Buy, maybe that's a little bit more male or whatever. So men do buy some useless technology and all of that. Lord knows I have, but I consider it research for the show. But yeah, it's just a lot of, this is why money is taken from male taxpayers. Like, men pay about 80% of the tax receipts, especially if you discount female employment in the state, right? So it is taking money from men and giving it to women so that women pump up the economy with massive amounts of consumption in the here and now. Yeah, and men can work till the wheels fall off and so on, right? So one of the reasons, another reason why, of course, they want to get rid of women's student loan debt is women are finding themselves unmarriable because of their debt. Have you ever dated a woman and ditched her for reasons of debt? I've never dated a woman that I've ditched for reasons of debt, but I will certainly say that I went on a first date with a woman and never saw her again because she was significantly in debt. I guess modern equivalent would be she had about $40,000 in credit card debt. And I'm like, No. No, thank you. I mean... So why?
I mean, just for dating.
Why don't you want to date a woman
who has a lot of debt?
And the student loan debt is pretty huge for a lot of women. Right? Let's see. Yeah. So, Americans, this was April 3rd, 2023. Americans hold $1.7 trillion in student loan debt. Nearly two-thirds of that money, almost $1 trillion, is owed by women. And black women, this is something Kevin Samuels talks about a lot, that the black women are going to suffer, are particularly affected by student loan debt. I like how they say affected by student loan debt, like it's just something in the air as opposed to choices you make. Black women in America owe an average of $37,558 compared to the $29,862 white men owe and $31,346 that men owe. It's like, yeah, they're burdened more by the debt. Women are just burdened more. Like, they just can't say women have chosen to go into debt and are not paying it off. And it's the kind of thing where if you go into debt, and you don't know how to pay it off or can't pay it off, then isn't that either a moral issue or an IQ issue? So, yeah, this was a woman at the end of her education. What's her name? Amy Eichberger. Now I want a German sandwich. All right. Tuition for community college, just a couple of $100 a semester in the 90s. Getting her associate's degree and thriving in an academic setting, she decided to level up, getting her bachelor's in public health. Then, facing lackluster job prospects, she pursued her master's in healthcare administration. Eventually, she went back to school again, completing a two-year graduate program required of her current job. All in all, she owed almost $350,000 for that education. Right. I took out loans for everything because I'm not making $1 million a year. It just piled on. It just kept piling on. It's like, what do you mean it just kept on piling on? On average, borrowers with graduate degrees have roughly $103,000 in student loans. Right? That's appalling. I never dated women in debt. And I've had times where I've had to live really like Bedouin-style teepee in the cold lean to pay off debt. I mean, I have no problem with strategic borrowing, but pay that shit back. Just pay it back, because you borrowed it. Otherwise, it's a kind of stealing. For me. But I won't... So women are finding themselves unmarriable because of debt. And of course, there's some people in the government who want to raise the birth rate, and if women are burdened with massive amounts of debt... Right? Then they can't have families. They can't have families. You burden women with debt, they can't have families. The birth rate collapses. Yeah. Women hold an average of $31,276 in student debt. So $31,276, this is of 2021, so it's probably worse now. Monthly loan payment of $307 the year after graduation. Women graduating with a bachelor's degree expect to earn an average of $35,000 and change. So,
What can I tell you?
Can I tell you? What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Let them pay. Okay, well, then they can't get married, they can't have kids, and birth rate collapses. See, I know people get mad, right? I know people get mad where, women, accountability, blah, blah, blah. But what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do? You should tax the endowments, the blah, blah, blah. I get all of that.
Crazy. I'm just trying to see if I can get 2024 data for this stuff. And of course, the cost of tuition has gone up like crazy because there's so much government subsidies and so on. And all it does is, the educational system in the West, in particular in the US, is just a way, in a sense, of holding children hostage so that a bunch of administrators can push paper around. Because if you look at the spending on teachers and on students, it's remained relatively flat, but the spending on infinite layers of bureaucracy has gone through the roof.
So it's just another transfer of resources from men to women.
And of course, I mean, the woke stuff is female nature plus the state is woke stuff, right? Female nature plus the state is woke stuff.
~65% of student loan debt is owned by women. Yeah, that's in what I've got, right?
So I wouldn't, when I was not in a marriage-minded state of mind, when I was dating, I wouldn't date a woman who was significantly in debt. No, of course not. I mean, so the woman I went on a first date with, she was a nice young woman. She was pretty and all of that. But $40,000 in debt, I can't date.
I mean, dating is to some degree about spending money, isn't it? Going to do fun things,
right?
Going maybe on a trip or two and going out for dinner and going dancing, going to see a movie, right? She can't afford that, right? She can't afford that.
So I'm going to date her because she'd be like, let's just stay in and watch TV. I'm like, no, I'm
in my 20s. I'm not, look at that. My beard matches my top. I'm not going to stay in and watch TV. What am I, 80? I'm not staying in to watch TV. I want to go out. I want to go rent a cottage. Right? Because I was making good money in the software field at that time. Back in the day, making some good money before, well, we know. So, I am want to date a woman. Because if she's still out there spending money, and if I remember rightly, and I think I do, this was, part of it was her just bad spending. It wasn't school, I don't think. And part of it was she had some ex-boyfriend who ran up all this money, right? So what are you going to do? If women make bad decisions, they have to be rescued. Men don't have to be rescued because we're more disposable, but women have to be rescued. Women, society protects women from consequences. It's like, well, yeah. I mean, what's our choice? I mean, people get mad at this. It's like, well, what's her choice? If a woman has a kid outside of wedlock, what is society going to do? I mean, the kid's there, right? Kid needs health care. Kid needs dental care. Kid needs food, shelter, clothing, toys, a crib, shelter. Like, it needs all of this stuff. You need your money for the kid. Someone's got to take care of the kid. Someone's got to breastfeed the kid. The woman can't work and do that. What's going to happen? So it's not, I don't know, it's not anything weird or creepy or nasty or wrong or unjust. It's like, well, a woman has a child outside of wedlock. Or women accumulate so much debt that men don't want to marry them. Because a man, I'll tell you how I look at it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, or maybe at least it's different for you. But I look at a woman, let's say she's got 40 grand in debt for a degree in English literature, right? And she can't find work in the field or whatever, right? She's got 40 grand in debt for a degree in English literature. Well, what am I going to say? So if we get married and you have kids, you're going to stop working. So I'm going to have to pay off that debt. So that is more than 40,000, right? Right? Let's see here. Debt paid off in, let's say you can do it in 15 years, right? Let's say you can do that in 15 years, right? Let's say you've got a decent interest rate, 5%, right? You're going to pay it off in 15 years, right? So I'm going to be paying $56,000, almost $57,000. And that's at a pretty low interest rate, right? If the interest rate is 7%, then it's a whole lot worse, right? Why are you not recalculating? That's not right. Oh, sorry, there it is. Yeah, that's almost 25,000, right? So I'm paying 60% additional, right? At 7%, it's $360 a month for 15 years. That's money right out of the mouths of my children. So I wouldn't date a woman who had significant debt. Now, it's one thing if she says, well, you know, I have a mortgage. Okay, then maybe we have a place to go and live, right? That's fine. That's valuable. I get that. I accept that. That's a good thing. But to date a woman who's got debt that doesn't provide economic productivity, in fact, it's even worse, right? For me, the way that I thought about women when I would talk to a woman and she'd say, oh yeah, you know, I got a degree in X, Y, and Z. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, what's your student loan experience, right? I think I borrowed a grand total of 10 grand for my student debt and paid it all off fairly promptly. I'm a big one for just pay it off. And I know there's arguments to say, well, invest the money, pay the difference. But I'm just like, I want it off my mind. I want it off my head. I want it out of my paperwork. I just pay it off, right? So I would look at that and I would say, okay, so what's your thinking here? If you're willing to stay home and have kids, why did you get an expensive degree? Especially if this was post-university. So it's one thing for a woman to go to the university to get, as they used to say, to get her MRS degree, right? It's one thing. But if you are a woman and you go and get an English literature degree, and you get into significant debt for it, and you have no particular plan afterwards, that just says you don't really think things through. So that's not good. And also, if you went to university to get a husband, why did you emerge from university with no husband or no long-term dating, whatever, leading to engagement, leading to marriage or whatever, right? So we're like, I don't really think you think things through. Also for myself, what I did, rightly or wrongly, I'm just telling you my sort of thought process for women with debt. It was like, and student loan debt in particular, but debt as a whole. But student loan debt is like, okay, so you're going to be more dissatisfied being a stay-at-home mom because you might have delusions of grandeur about what you're capable of because you have got this education, right? So that's bad. So why would I want to fund a woman's education when she's going to be a stay-at-home mom and feel dissatisfied because, oh, I'm just, all I'm doing is blah, 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 right? Just doesn't show much thinking through, if that makes sense. Somebody writes, I just finished your novel, The Present. Fantastic book. Thank you for writing this. I will start The Future, your novel, The Future, tonight. Did you have an inspiration for the Oliver character? All right, hit me with a why. I don't know how much time to spend on this. And remember, freedomain.com/donate. everybody who donates gets a free copy of The History of Philosophy, one of my greatest series ever. But yeah, freedomain.com/donate, or you can donate right on the app. On Locals, you can donate on the app or on the website, either on Locals or Rumble, but freedomain.com/donate, whether this is now or later, I would appreciate that. I mean, and summers are tough, right? So I know that donations are down in the summer as a whole, and that's tough, right? But I do see, this is the funny thing, just, you know, from the sort of internal business stuff, I'm not trying to nag or anything like that. I'm just telling you the internal business stuff. I have a lot of requests for paid call-ins. And if the paid call-ins make more money than the live streams, I'm going to have to do more paid call-ins and fewer live streams because, you know, we've got payroll and all that sort of stuff. So just have to be responsible. Does the instinct to protect women have an age limit? It does not. It does not. It does not. Because old men are considered disposable and old women are grandmothers with apple pie in the oven who need to be protected at all costs. It just is our instinct and it is just the way things roll. And we have evolved to take care of grandparents because if we slam the door in our wife's elderly mother's face, she's probably going to leave us, right? So in order to maintain family peace in general, the men take the aging grandmothers in. Not necessarily the aging grandfathers, although that can happen, but it doesn't have quite the same impulse as a home. So you have a few people have read it. Actually, only one person I can see here. So the character Oliver was based upon myself if I had been raised by my aunts. So the character of Oliver is me if I had remained being raised by my aunts. So my father, my late father, has had three sisters who were very staunch and very healthy in a way and very practical and hardworking, work the land, work the farms, women. Married, lots of kids, and, you know, hardworking, baking, and creating, and managing, and they did some homeschooling, if I remember rightly, and just very solid, sensible women. Like, my mother was this, like, Tennessee Williams caricature of femininity, and these women were very sort of solid, sensible, and practical, and very Christian. And every time I lived with them, which I did from time to time as a kid, I would go to church. And they would grill me on church matters and make sure that my Christianity was fully founded within my soul and all kinds of wonderful stuff. So Oliver's entire fairly wonderful family is based upon that side of my family. And Oliver is me if I had remained under their tutelage and protection, because I would stay with them on a somewhat regular basis. My mother was hospitalized for depression for months after I was born, and I was raised in that sense by an aunt who, my middle name is named after her husband, and she was so close to me that she actually named one of her later children after me. So we were very, very close, and I think that had a big effect on my emotional and psychological development. Other family members weren't quite so lucky, so... But yes, freedomain.com/donate and freedomain.com/books to get these novels. Trust me, you really, really should. That is a side of myself that is somewhat unexplored over the course of this philosophical conversation, which I love and is great, but the artistic side is something that is very strong for me and very powerful for me. I'm actually starting to work on the outlines of a new book, a new novel at the moment, because I do miss it. I do miss that juicy, deep, squishy, emotional, visceral, bone marrow language that goes into writing novels. The philosophical stuff is great. I actually have an article coming out soon. That's great, but it's a little dry in terms of like the real deep emotional muscle work that goes on with writing fiction. To float deep into people's unconscious and base of the brain, spinal traction language excavations is great. It's great. All right. Going once, going twice. Could we get a tease on this novel? I'm fascinated by breakups. So this is going to be a novel from the male and female perspective about the disintegration of a marriage based upon ideology, but it's in reverse. So it starts at the end and goes back to the beginning. So it is very, very, for me, that's a cool structure to work with. And so it's a novel in reverse from the male and female perspective about how ideology totally firebombs a marriage. I want people to see the end and then see it back to the small signs at the beginning. That's the general idea. I'm really, because of course I've talked now to thousands of people about what were the signs at the beginning, right? And I want people to see the signs at the beginning, but you have to start with the disaster at the end. It's current time period. That's right. That's right. And Lord knows I've known enough breakups, and I've, of course, I've heard of enough breakups in my call-in shows that I have really, really, really quite a lot of material to work with. So that's great. And I just want it to be truly heartbreaking when you see how ideology destroys the heart. Sounds interesting. It's already on my reading list. Good, good. I mean, it'll probably get done over the winter. But I do miss the creative writing side. All right, going once, going twice. Any other last tips? freedomain.com/donate, or you can tip right here. And don't forget my free novels, almostnovel.com, jaspernovel.com, artoftheargument.com. It's a great book on debating. In what call-in did you guys solve a crime? Oh, wow, that was wild this week. Fortunately, it was not a paid call-in, so it can go out. It was pretty wild. It was just this week. I have tidied it up, but it is unprocessed as yet. But it will probably go out over the next couple of days to donors first, I imagine, and then out to the Gen Pop. But yeah, it was really something. I made a suggestion over the course of the call. Guy acted on it, and it was resolved in the call. It was just wild. It's just wild. Again, and I really do thank everyone for the deep privilege of this work. It's just wonderful. All right, well, have yourselves an absolutely delightful and wonderful evening. Thank you, everybody, so much for dropping by tonight. Donations were low over the course of the show as a whole, which is, you know, I understand. Again, it's summer. I know the economy is tough. Inflation is tough. So I get all of that. And if you can't afford, don't worry about it a thing. If you can't afford, absolutely, absolutely enjoy the show. And we can all wait until the economy gets a little better, which could happen, I guess, in November thereafter. So I really do appreciate your support, whatever you can spare. If you can't spare anything, don't worry about it. Just enjoy the show as much as you want, and we'll solve and deal with it later. Have a glorious evening. Lots of love from up here. Take care, my friends. I'll talk to you soon.